Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We're going to have a big hour coming your way. Mike Allen from Axios and Britt Hume is standing by. I mean, just breakneck series of really impactful news from the assassination attempt on Saturday, the investigation that ensued, the 4 days of a Republican convention that reproduced a lot of news like a vice presidential candidate, some really substantial endorsements of the president, the humanizing of the former president, and then he had the rally on Saturday, so he was back in action. So that is substantial. And then you have Joe Biden at 1:46 yesterday afternoon, Eastern time, deciding I will be stepping aside. And don't act like this wasn't pushed on him. It absolutely was. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, the failures are just absolutely outrageous and incredible. You know, first, you start asking the question, is this a failure of resources? Is this a failure of protocols or a failure of management? It appears that now we know that it's all three.
That is Mike Turner. The assassination investigation begins as calls come from massive resignation leading all the way up to Mayorkas as he gets caught with another consequential lie.
Number two.
You'd investigate the people that hid Joe Biden's condition?
Well, I think somebody has to look at it. Look, you had people that lied to the American public.
There's a constitutional process, the 25th Amendment. If Joe Biden can't run for president, he can't serve as president.
You would think, but do they want that? Trump world response to the upside down world of the Democrats and a possible matchup with Harris.
Number one.
He has put people over politics and patriotism over personal position.
You know, the president took the honorable path.
I think today we should focus on Joe Biden's incredible legacy of service to our nation.
Right, which they ended. Not Chris Coons, but Nancy Pelosi and all the higher-ups in the Democratic world. Biden is out. Is the Vice President Kamala Harris in? Britt Hume joins us now. He was armchairing and analyzing all the breaking news yesterday. Britt, your thoughts about the praise that Joe Biden's getting from stepping aside? Man, he had to be pushed aside, kicking and screaming.
He did, but in the end, he did it. And the relief is what I hear in the voices of these Democrats praising him, because they're glad he's out, and they're glad he's out for the sake of the party's presidential hopes, but also many of them for their own hopes of staying in office. So, there's gratitude, all right, but not so much for his service, but for his ending it.
So, are they doing this because of his health, or are they doing it because of the polls?
They're doing it because of all of it, and they're all related. His record and his health are why the polls are so bad, because you know, everybody could see it, and I think the public, broadly speaking, saw it before the media in Washington were willing to see it. So that's, and as they look at that, they know he couldn't really serve. Now, the argument is being made that he can't serve 4 months because he, but I think the counter to that is, well, he didn't say he couldn't serve 4 months. He basically indicated he couldn't serve 4 more years.
Well, we know the polls. If you look at Harris right now, they said she's got roughly about 500 delegates pledged to her. She needs, I think she needs just over 1,086 in order to do it. We'll see what happens if it's going to last 3 more weeks. But I think it's pretty conspicuous by their absence. Nancy Pelosi is not endorsed. Obama has not picked. Hakeem Jeffries has not picked. Chuck Schumer has not gone out of his way to say Vice President Harris should be the nominee. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's not even been 24 hours, Brian. Give these events time. Look, in order for there to be a contest, somebody's got to step up and run against her. Otherwise, she'll just coast to the nomination. And you know, she has a quarter of the delegates already endorsed her. The president has endorsed her. She's a minority female. She's the vice president, a heartbeat away from the presidency already. I mean, that's a pretty formidable array of circumstances to go against if you think that she shouldn't be the one. I think it was all Pelosi, Schumer, and Obama could do to get Biden out of the race. I'd be surprised if they bucked her.
True. And this is why I said it, because Clintons have endorsed. Clyburn has endorsed her. Governor Roy Cooper, almost everybody got 153 Democrats in the House, 32 senators, 23 governors. So I just thought the three biggest names have not. So I think it's to me, it might be an appeal. We don't want to make it appear like we are leading this charge. We'll let the masses push it that way. Do you think that could be correct, even though they're all about pushing Biden out of the way?
I don't know. I mean, frankly, I think it's unimportant, Brian, whether they endorse her now or not. I think she's going to be awfully hard to stop.
What about the New York Times editorial page saying that they should have a more open process? Does that matter?
No, I don't think it matters at all. They're going to have a process that where the delegates cast the vote. After all, remember, Biden, although he had delegates lined up and he'd won all these primaries, he hadn't yet been formally nominated. So, you know, technically speaking, he was not yet the nominee. And now you've got this convention coming up, packed to the rafters with Biden delegates. Are they gonna go against his choice? I don't think so.
Do you read anything into the "here I resign, I'm not going to run for re-election"? I didn't resign. I'm not going to run for re-election. That's one email, one message. And the next message is, I encourage everyone to support my vice president. Do you look anything into the two separate announcements?
No, I think it's mildly interesting that he did it that way. And look, the letter that he wrote and released on Twitter initially will become the official record. He might not have wanted to stick a political endorsement in that, and so he waited a few minutes to come out and endorse her and do it in a separate document. That makes a certain amount of sense. But I think all of it is sort of historical detail. It's not really important to the outcome of things.
So you think she's gonna get it?
Well, I think she's going to be hard to stop. I mean, look, you never say never, and if the last few weeks have taught us anything, it's that surprises abound. It would be interesting if somebody came out and ran against her. Interesting if we had a truly open convention. But we haven't got a candidate against her yet, and until we do, she's gliding. She's on a glide path to be the nominee.
So they're looking at some likely running mates. The odds are in there. And people looking at Roy Cooper because they seem to have a relationship when they were both attorney generals. People looking at Senator Kelly over in Arizona. They're also looking at J.P. Pritzker, and as well as Shapiro. What do you think, who do you think is likely to worry the Trump team the most?
Well, I don't think the vice presidential candidates end up mattering all that much. She might be smart to pick somebody who's in kind of a known moderate with a solid record. Mark Kelly would be a good choice. Perhaps Roy Cooper would be a good choice. But it's a secondary matter, Brian.
It's a second. That's true. But if you're looking to get that, maybe that little bit of a difference in Pennsylvania, I guess we'll see what happens. So the other thing to keep in mind, too, is what the Republicans do from here. It looks as though if you read the New York Times and Washington Post over the weekend and talking to Jason Miller personally, they do have a game plan for Kamala. Where do you see her vulnerabilities?
Well, she has a reputation of being kind of a giggling idiot. In the eyes of a lot of people, because she's had these statements where she comes out and giggles her way through some circular word salad, which is, you know, for which she became noted. Now, there's obviously more to her than that. She's had some jobs. She was a prosecutor and attorney general, I guess, and she's been vice president now for nearly 4 years. So she's got some things to talk about that she's done, but she's got to overcome the reputation that she earned early in her vice presidency. And she's got to be able to get out there and talk sensibly about things instead of these meandering comments that she's made over time that have become celebrated. They were, you know, if you're on social media, every time she'd make one of these weird statements, it would appear everywhere. A lot of people have seen them. So she's got some things to overcome. But remember, well, the important thing to keep in mind as we look at this, Brian, is that Trump is vulnerable. You know, for all the unity that was shown at that Republican convention and all the glorification of him, and even from the sympathy he earned by nearly getting shot to death, he hovers below 50% in approval rating. His approval ratings were better than Biden's, but not that much better. Now Biden is gone. The age issue's off the table. They got a younger candidate. Now he's the old guy. I'm not sure how much mileage they can get out of that, but there it is. So if you look at this carefully, a united Democratic Party filled with enthusiasm, which they certainly lacked, and I think they will have it, is a more formidable challenge to former President Trump than Joe Biden and as a spent force ever could have been.
Right. It's not going to help her that she's against fracking before she became vice president. She kind of
wanted to. It won't help her in Pennsylvania.
Sure.
Everybody will know about that. Well, but look, I mean, she has some strengths, mainly because she's not Biden. Now she's got to show some strengths of her own.
She's got to understand policy. I think she always can give a good speech. She's competent. The word is she doesn't study. And if you go deep in any of her interviews, you could see those rumors bear out. The Trump ad, the Trump machine has already rolled out an ad. Listen to this. Cut 30.
Kamala was in on it. She covered up Joe's obvious mental decline.
Our president is in good shape, in good health.
Kamala owns this failed record.
So they're going to go after, why did you not tell us when he was failing? I mean, of late, you see that he forgot his name of the Secretary of Defense, and you know about the other ones on the national stage. So when all this was happening, she was denying it. So do you think that's a vulnerability? Why did you cover up for the decline of the president?
I do think that's a vulnerability, and she'll have to explain that. How powerful it'll turn out to be is anybody's guess, but that's a vulnerability for sure. Everybody who is associated with that long process over years of trying to disguise the truth about what condition Joe Biden was in has to answer for that, and certainly she will have to.
So you got 106 days, Britt Hume, until we get an election. You got about a couple of weeks until they have the Democratic National Convention. Do you think that they have an opportunity still to get a lot of momentum in the backstretch?
Well, they got a lot better chance than they did this time 24 hours ago when Biden seemed to be dug in and looked like he was going to be the nominee. After all, he had all the delegates he needed to be nominated. And the party was dispirited and divided and demoralized. And now they've got a fresh start of sorts. It's very late. It's very unusual. And she will have to answer not just for the cover-up of Biden's actual condition, but she'll have to answer for the record they have in office. And, yes, they have achievements of the kind that the Democrats like to crow about, mostly a lot of spending. But there's some foreign policy achievements worth talking about, the strengthening of some alliances, particularly in the Pacific. But that you don't associate her particularly with all that. But nonetheless, they've got a chance. And I think that the combination of relief and a new face will give them some momentum, and they'll have a convention which will be 4 days designed to glorify her. And we'll see how they do.
All right. Britt, you going?
I think I'm going. Yes. Yeah, I'll be in Chicago and hopefully be able to get to the convention through the protesters.
I know. That's what I hear. Britt Hume, thanks so much. Exciting time. It's so great to have you.
Glad to talk to you, Brian, as always.
You got it, sir. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I'll be able to take your calls. I know you have a lot in your mind. You've had a lot to say. You have a lot. I know you're thinking, talking about it at your barbecue. I know you're at the pool. I know you're having great conversations in the parking lots and at the Walmart and at the Home Depot. So bring it to the show. 1-866-408-7669. A guy that predicted that Joe Biden would not last the weekend is Mike Allen, co-founder of Axios. He'll be with us at 34. You're next.
Yellow school bus, right? Yellow school bus.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But I'm told that now this is likely to move very fast. James Carville, the raging Cajun, who had been calling for a series of regional primaries, he told me yesterday that he now sees very little time or appetite for any kind of an extended process, whether it's debates, whether it's mini primaries, whether it's flash primaries. He says there's just not that time. He said the vibe now is let's go, and the let's go for the Democratic Party is with Vice President Harris.
Right. So nobody said that she'd be the pick, but what she was the pick, the politically correct pick of Joe Biden. So one person picked her reluctantly because he wanted a woman and he wanted a minority, and she fit the bill. Nobody else really checked out of the background check, and she has fallen short since. Jason Miller, the senior advisor to Donald Trump Communications Division, said this last night about Kamala. She's got a lot to answer for. Cut 35.
The fact of the matter is that Kamala Harris is going to own everything from the Harris-Biden administration over the past 3.5 years. And whether it be the record-setting illegal immigration, whether it be the sky-high inflation, the chaos all across the globe, she has to own all of that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And she'll do it proudly. I mean, she's proud of the CHIPS Act. She's proud of expanding NATO. She is going to be proud, she said, of bringing decency back to the World Forum. I don't think that's anything to run on. She's proud of the new Green Deal. Nobody else is. She's proud of the electric car. So the thing she's going to be proud of, the infrastructure plan with 8 terminals. She's going to be proud of the rescue plan, which caused inflation. So you're going to be able to say, this is almost surreal. You watch one channel and they say Joe Biden's this great president, passed more than anybody else in modern history. And then you have a dose of sanity and you say, wait a second, what have these plans done? How have they turned us around? Please don't tell me the economy is great. Please don't tell me our standing in the world is better. Please don't tell me our Pentagon is better off. Where have you haven't had a meeting of cabinet officials in 9 months. You don't have any, you haven't had one press conference. It's because you were forced to prove to everybody that you can't do the job anymore. You don't do any sit-down interviews. There's one channel that thinks it's perfect that he does all that, that he can't leave a stage, that he has to use steps that are for children to get into Air Force One. They think that he's been great. They just think he should just leave on a high. And you have other people, and I think that most clear-thinking people, moderates and I guess mostly conservatives, that say, what a disaster this has been. Please don't tell me he's been in charge. How could he let the invasion of Ukraine take place? How could he have not anticipated and put more in place in terms of arming the Ukrainians to defend themselves? How could he have been so wrong about Afghanistan? How could he be pursuing a reapproachment with Iran and allowing Hezbollah and Hamas to be financed to the point where they cause absolute chaos and put the Middle East on fire? They have shut down 2 waterways, the Red Sea, the latest. The Houthi rebels, Hezbollah, Hamas, financed by Iran, and our relations with them are even worse as they take shots at us. This is the guy who supposedly brought success to the White House? I don't know. Do you think he brought us out of the pandemic effectively? More people lost since the pandemic with a vaccine than Trump lost without one? Overpromising when all this stuff was done? Keeping schools closed, not standing up to the unions? The teachers' unions? This guy was about to lose. And she's got to run on what he did. And if she wants to separate herself, it's not to be more moderate. It's to be more left. Good luck with that. What went on behind the scenes to bring us to this point? Mike Allen of Axios next.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Come on. The process is open. It's been open ever since the spring of the year. We put in place a process by which anybody who wants to can get into this race, and it's open. You get 300 signatures right now. Get 300 signatures, no more than 50 from any one state, and you can have your name placed into nomination. And then you politic among the delegates like everybody else will.
Well, she's got over 500 delegates, they say, and she needs just over 1,000. And that was James Clyburn saying, nothing's fixed. You can all get in. Is that indeed the case? Mike Allen, Axios co-founder, who predicted that Joe Biden would not last this weekend, and he was right. At 1:46, a message came out that Joe Biden says, I'm not going to be up for re-election. Mike, welcome back. First off, your thoughts about Jim Clyburn. Is this an open process?
Well, Brian, thank you for having me, and what a good time in Milwaukee. Such a great time.
Yep.
And Republicans were so excited that when I saw you Friday morning, as I was walking into your hit, the bar with the great name in Milwaukee of Drink Wisconsinably, Drink Wisconsinably, people were still pouring out of that bar, having been there all night at the time that you were in the middle of your show. But Brian, putting aside the technicalities of it, the reality of this is that this is now going to move very quickly. And the reason that you saw President Biden, former President Obama yesterday, and the DNC chair yesterday, they're leaving open some type of process, but the time is short. It's 106 days till the Democratic convention in Chicago, and Vice President Harris is going to be the nominee. I talked yesterday with James Carville, the raging Cajun, who had been pushing for some kind of regional debate,
yes,
or regional primaries. And Brian, as you know, the reason that he, Axelrod, others had been pushing the idea of some sort of process is they too thought at the end of the day it was going to be Vice President Harris, but they know that a process makes her stronger. That you know this from both parties, that you're better off after a primary. You sharpen your game just as you would in any type of endeavor. But now James Carville tells me there's not time. It's too late for that. He told me his words were, there's not the time or the appetite for it. So I think that there will be the motions of a process. They don't want people to say the Democratic Party is being undemocratic, but I don't want your listeners to think there's a mystery about where this is headed.
It's going to be Kamala Harris, you believe, and it's a matter of, but it's just, it is interesting that you don't have Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, or President Obama, or Michelle Obama. They're going out of their way saying want an open process. The Clintons didn't wait. What is it, up to 53 House members, 53, what number is it now they're up to? How many House members? You have 153 Democratic congressmen have said Kamala's should be the nominee, 32 senators, 23 Democratic governors. So why is it okay for them to go and those other ones not? Why don't they care about the perception of an open process?
I think that if you want to be on the Harris, you want to be in the Harris bubble, you want to move quick, you don't want speculation about you, like very interesting, the Pennsylvania governor, Josh Shapiro, who's on everybody's list as a potential vice president for her. He endorsed her out of the gate. And so lots of people are doing that. I think that some of those leaders that you were talking about may be holding back so that it's not accused of being a coronation. Like yesterday, you saw Elon Musk on Twitter suggesting the fix is in. I think they're trying to head that off. And then when they do endorse her, perhaps in person, perhaps an in-person event, it'll be a big deal.
All right. So let's bring us behind the scenes. What was it like being President Biden over the weekend?
Yeah. So I'm told that Friday night he was still raging, furious at all the Democrats who had, in his view, politically backstabbed him, people who undermined him, people who told him that he should get out of the race. And to hear people in the White House tell it, some of these are people who just a couple weeks ago were asking for favors. They were on the list to call because they wanted something, and now they're saying he's not fit to be the nominee. And so he was angry about that. But I'm told that starting Saturday evening, he moved beyond that. It was driven by data, and that is no one could show him a way that he could win. As he had his final meetings with his top two advisors, Mike Donilon from the campaign side, Steve Ricchetti from the White House side, both of them in Rehoboth Beach at the beach house that's the happy place for President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden, they just saw swing states getting worse. And then the next morning, 6 a.m., as if to put a bow around it, that stunning poll from the Detroit Free Press former President Trump up 7 points in Michigan, a must-win state for President Biden. Biden needs that Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan blue wall. Trump up 7 points. And here was an amazing fact that the Detroit Free Press story, the Freep story, pointed out. President Trump was ahead in every part of Michigan, including – Brian, are you sitting down?
Yeah.
Good. In every part of the state, including Metro Detroit.
Wow.
Now, there he was up only 2 points within the margin of error, but that's a small taste of the data the president was seeing, and I'm told that he went from fury, he went to being resigned to reality. As one person close to the president put it to me, he's a professional. That is, this had been his life for 50 years, and he made the decision that he had to make.
So you also report, am I right, Mike Allen, at Axios, that you believe one of his hesitations of bowing out Joe Biden was he didn't think his vice president could win. Did he change his mind?
Yeah, this is a more great reporting from Axios Alex Thompson, who has furiously been reporting on the president's age accommodations for some time. It was Alex who wrote about the special sneakers that he was wearing. It was Alex who wrote about the shorter stairs on Air Force One. And this morning, Alex is up on Axios with a scoop, headline, Biden doubted Harris election chances. And it's saying that that for a long time, he and his senior aides have been worried that she wasn't up to taking on Trump. And that was part of what held him back. And the story points out these private anxieties of the Biden team reflect broader questions among some Democratic leaders. There are questions about Vice President Harris. They're moving fast to answer them. Yesterday, she spent 10 hours on the phone, talked to 100 labor leaders, civil rights leaders, lawmakers, determined, in Vice President Harris's words, she's going to earn this.
I guess, and she wants to do it before they get to Chicago. Is that correct?
Well, sure. They want to get as much done because this is a race, Brian. The way that one Democrat put it to me is every day that goes by that there's either some kind of a process or some kind of questions, like Senator Manchin of West Virginia, of course, was a very powerful Democrat, now an independent who caucuses with Democrats. Yesterday he raised, and then today raised again, the possibility that he would run, that he would re-register as a Democrat. And then he went on CBS Mornings and said he's not going to run. So the more that the party is distracted by questions about who the ultimate nominee is going to be, the worse off they are. There's a real opportunity here for Vice President Harris. As James Carville points out to me, most people don't know her. Like, your listeners are like very politically savvy, much more plugged in than the average bear. And so they think that they have an opinion about Vice President Harris. But for most Americans, there's a lot that she can still fill in. So what we look for, right, as she tries to take on Trump are, one, like putting reproductive rights at the center of the campaign. Two, she's 59. President Trump is 78. So what's that, an 18-year difference, 19-year difference? The Republicans are – the Democrats now can say, you want to make youth an issue, bring it on. And then third, the frame that they're going to use – and, Brian, I know this won't surprise you, but the frame you're going to hear a lot from Democrats is she's a former prosecutor, of course, elected the San Francisco DA, and she was attorney general in my home state of California. The former prosecutor versus the recently convicted felon, You're going to hear that again and again and again and again.
Yeah, the problem with that is the case is being reexamined now with the Supreme Court ruling on immunity, let alone the appeal that could be pending. We'll see how that goes. Joe Manchin said this, and I think it's pretty astute. Cut 18.
First of all, let me make it very clear to you, Tony, I am not going to be a candidate for president. I'm a candidate for basically speaking for the middle of this country. There are 51% of the people that are registered to participate in an election in America that basically are in the same party I am, independent. 51% of us, 51. Only 23 are registered as Democrats, only 25 as Republicans. Neither side can win without the sensible, moderate middle. They can't do it.
I just don't know if it's possible for Kamala Harris, if that is indeed true and the numbers don't lie, to be looked at as a moderate who's already on the record of abolishing ICE, who's already on the record being for a $10 trillion new Green Deal, who already said, I'd like to ban fracking, who was given to the rioters to bail them out of jail. I think that you have a problem with her record. Some of her positions is the reason why she didn't even get to Iowa as a candidate.
Well, there's a funny twist there, though. There's a nuance to that that I know, Brian, you'll appreciate. And that is that in California, she was actually known for being pretty tough on criminals. And that doesn't play great in a Democratic primary. So she wasn't able to lean into that. Now, if you look at where the country is and where the Trump campaign believes that aside from prices, which is what they now call inflation, it's a more friendly, it's a more accessible way to describe it. Prices, inflation, economy. Put that aside. What's the big issue for President Trump? It's the border and crime. And crime, she's going to be able to say that she's tough. The border is really a problem because it's a place that the Republicans will spend a lot of their fire on her because, of course, in the first year of the administration, she was given some responsibility, and this is sometimes overstated, but responsibility for the diplomatic parts of trying to reduce the flows at the border, including working with Mexico, working with the Northern Triangle countries. But Republicans are going to talk a lot about that, and that's why they say they're not like they won't admit it. But Brian, there's no question they preferred to run against Joe Biden. But now that they're likely to have Vice President Harris, how are they going to lean into that? For sure, talking about her role on the border, they're going to say she owns everything that we were going to run against President Biden, including inflation, crime, immigration. And we're going to add to that, in addition to the border, we're going to say, is she culpable in not being candid about the president's health? Like they'll say basically, what did she know and when did she know it about the president's condition?
Right, which I think on some levels, Democrats in some cases are in denial of his deterioration, which is laughable. Mike, great stuff. I hope to talk to you again during the week as Axios continues to make great progress on one of the biggest stories of modern politics. Thanks, Mike.
Love to, Brian. Thanks for the combo.
You got it. Meanwhile, the assassination investigation, we haven't really touched. Trump's first appearance on Saturday night. We covered it on One Nation last night over the weekend. We were there live. Took a lot of it. I did talk to the president over the weekend, the former president over the weekend, too, almost anticipating this is where we're going to be at. We just didn't know what day this whole thing was going to be turned over to a new candidate, but it does look like he's going to be the vice president. Your call's next, and also we'll have a chance to hear some more of what people are saying. They are praising Joe Biden for stepping aside. Really? He was forced offside. He was kicked off a ledge, and then while falling, said, okay, I resign. Or I promise not to run again. I don't know if that's laudable. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He has put people over politics and patriotism over personal position. And this is another heroic act in a long-running series of heroic acts by Joe Biden.
You know, the president took the honorable path. And I think, yes, this will be about his legacy.
So that is Klobuchar, Chris Coons, Cried, Elizabeth Warren, praised him. He had to be forced out. Who are you kidding? He was in a rage. He feels like he'd been stabbed in the back and stabbed in the front by the people that he helped most, and that they was lauding him to the highest degree. And I'm talking about Barack Obama. My goodness, you talk about a complex relationship, and I'm being kind. George Clooney, he hosting a big fundraiser, then stabs him right in the back in an editorial. Nancy Pelosi, we could do this the hard way or we could do this the easy way. Believe it or not, this way was considered the easy way. So, and Hakeem Jeffries last weekend evidently said you can't win. John in California. Hey, John.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to remind everybody, remember when Trump agreed to the debate, no conditions, basically,
yep.
CNN and everything else, what a master stroke that was. Trump is willing to take chances because of his confidence and because he knows he thinks he's right about things. I do have one worry about Harris. I think that helps her in Arizona and Georgia, hurts her in the Midwest. And the reason for Arizona is because of a lot of Californians that moved there over the years. And then, of course, Georgia, I think, you know, it could be a problem.
How about Atlanta? Yeah, but, John, a lot of people got moved away from people like Kamala Harris. That's why they left. Gary in Daytona. Gary.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. I'm getting ready to watch the hearing here, and
James,
I know
Comer.
You're on the – yes. I won't go to the total conspiracy thing like a lot of people, but I have a really strong belief a couple of days afterwards. I thought that there was definitely intentional incompetence, meaning I really do believe that people knew their jobs and people decided not to do their jobs.
I hope that's not the case, Gary, but I hope we're going to find out within 45 days there's another independent commission with some law enforcement involved. But this is the problem. Secret Service not held a press conference. They have not tried every day to dispel rumors and get us to facts. So you have every right, Gary and Daytona, to come up with your own theory, because they are disrespecting us by not telling us what they know.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, back at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. So glad to be in Milwaukee for all those historic events and a four-day convention like no other. And then, of course, we had the news on Saturday night. The president was going back to the rally stage, even though he was shot the week before. The assassination investigation is in full zenith. And we're going to bring you the latest right now. James Comer is opening up the hearings with the United States Secret Service Director right now. He has asked for her to resign. I think he's opening up with that. But most of all, she's got to give answers. I talk to everybody. There's no reason why we shouldn't have had press conference after press conference every day. This is where we fell short. This is what we need to know. This is what the request was for additional Secret Service. This is why I said no. Instead, we get this revelation of the Washington Post right before I was about to go on the air with One Nation Saturday that Michael Waltz was right. When he came out and said the Trump team has demanded repeatedly for more Secret Service and they were rejected immediately. Secretary Mayorkas said that is wrong and irresponsible. Washington Post found out four separate sources, request denied, and a meandering response to the revelation in the Washington Post, which we all knew was true. I'm going to bring you the latest if Comer with a brand new haircut has anything. Also, the stunning news yesterday at 1:46 that President Biden will no longer be running for re-election, and Kamala Harris has already gotten a lot of people's support. Over 500 delegates pledged to her. She needs 1,086 to become the nominee. Nobody else has their hat in the ring. This hour, we're going to talk to Democratic attorney for the House Judiciary Committee himself, Julian Epstein. But now let's go over to Michael Goodwin, the first to talk to the former president after he was nearly killed on the stage in Butler, Pennsylvania. Michael, welcome back. First off, I'll pull you off your beat on Trump to talk to your beat on Joe Biden. He is out. The way it happened, what strikes you as the most interesting?
Well, Brian, good morning. Look, I think when the debate happened, I'm going to pat myself on the back because I said he would be gone within a month. I said that in the night of the debate. And here we are, not quite a month, and he's gone. And the reason I said that, I think it bears note to given what has happened, that the polls would reflect his poor performance and the fundraiser, the donors, would begin to raise objections to pouring more money in after bad. And I think that is what did this, that the party waited to see. They gave him a chance. You know, they all said, yes, it was a bad night, if they would talk at all. But they waited to see the polls. They waited to see the donors. And both of them are in the tank, and ergo, he has to go. Now, in terms of what he said yesterday in his statement, I think it is remarkable, Brian, that we have not seen him.
I know.
I mean, this statement could have been written by anybody. And there's a lot of suspicion, of course, among people who don't trust the government that something's going on here. I mean, the president of the United States has decided he will not continue his campaign. And he issues a statement without any photograph, without any sign that it's him. We don't even know. I mean, we assume, we trust that it's him. But why wouldn't he give us, why wouldn't,
well, you know what they say?
I'll
tell you what they said. They said his voice is raspy and he's still recovering from the effects of COVID, which I'm not sure he even tested negative from yet. It leaves us with 107 days until the election. LBJ gave us 219, Harry Truman 220, Calvin Coolidge 462. Joe waits till 107 days left. What I think is comical is, you know, Chris Coons crying and Van Jones crying. What a selfless act. My goodness, this guy was in a rage by all accounts over the last 3 weeks. Defiant. Yes. I will not be going anywhere. Emotionally disturbed that his friends that are asking for favors are now turning on him by the day. And now they say that he did a great thing for the country. LBJ had an interesting approach. He could have got 4 more years. He said, the war's too much. You don't want me. I'm out. Joe refused to read the signs that were in neon in front of his mirror.
Yes, he had to be forced out. And look, I think another thing bears repeating too, Brian, and that is this idea of great accomplishments, a great historic president. Are you kidding me? I mean, he has a 36% approval rating. So you're saying that the public doesn't understand what a good president he has been.
Oh,
that's bull.
That's a great point.
The public
point.
Understands what
great
a terrible point. President he has been. That's the fact of the matter. So we are being lied to on an institutional, industrial scale here about what's really going on. And this idea that, it's open. The process is open. This thing has been handed to Kamala Harris. They've been working on this behind the scenes. She lined up within 3 hours yesterday of Biden's announcement, all 50 state Democratic chairmen had pledged allegiance to Kamala Harris. Oh, this is sudden? Come on. I mean, I think that the Democrats, you know, the idea that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy looks more and more like the lie of the year, that the real threat to democracy is the Democratic Party. Now, we've known that because they wanted to keep Donald Trump off the ballot. They wanted to imprison him. They wanted to bankrupt him. But now we see they're doing it to their own voters as well. They don't really trust voters. That, to me, is the bottom line in this whole disaster.
So I want you to hear what Mark Halperin said about why he turned around and endorsed Harris, who, according to Axios, he doubted could win. Cut five.
I believe what happened was after I reported he wasn't going to endorse, that he was besieged with calls and his team was besieged with calls with folks to say, if you get out, you must endorse your vice president. You've said she's the most qualified person to be the president. You have to endorse her. So I think I was right at the time what his intentions were, but it changed because of the pressure that he got. In the interim, a lot's happened behind the scenes since my initial reporting, but the basic thrust of it is I think this will be what I call a contested convention that's not contested. I've talked to people close to all the other people who are named as potential candidates, and I don't at this point foresee anyone challenging her. Although, again, the desire in her camp is to make this seem as open a process as possible. The delegates will be the one who pick, and they're Biden-Harris delegates. They're aligned with her personally and ideologically. So I suspect, right, even if challenged, she'll be the nominee. And I don't right now see any major challenge to her.
So that's just it. They don't want to make it seem like an anointing. Where's Obama? Where's Pelosi? Where's Jeffries? Where's Schumer? And that's because they don't, in my humble opinion, they don't want to seem to be putting their hands on the scale, even though they did in order to boot him out. Clinton's came in right away and said, number one, Joe should stay. And when Joe stepped aside, they quickly endorsed Harris. So why do these other people stay on the sideline? They don't want to see the fingerprints on the demise of Biden?
Yeah, I mean, I think they want it to look like something it's not, right? They don't want to acknowledge that it is a heavy-handed taking it away from Biden and giving it to Harris. They want to pretend that it's a Democratic maneuver, but it's not. Not when you have a handful of people in there pressuring Biden, not when you have 50 states, the chairman only of the parties in 50. So you're talking about 100 people maybe. Canceling the votes of 14 million people in the primary system and handing it to Harris, where the polls have shown that she is at best no better than Biden when it comes to playing against Trump. So, look, this is the Democratic Party at work. And I think all Americans should pay attention to this, because this is not democracy. This is not an open process. This is pretending to be an open process and claiming it's an open process. But in reality, it is a closed process. This is like a union shop. You have to be a member of the union to work here. Well, you have to believe and you have to trust and give your power to the leaders of the Democratic Party in this situation.
So I want you to hear, by the way, head-to-head, looking at the polls, she has risen up just a little bit. She leads right now in an aggregate of the polls, a real clear average, 47-45 Trump. That's around the same as Trump had a 2.5 lead over Biden on the aggregate. If you put Kennedy in there, Trump wins by Kennedy and Jill Stein and Cornel West. It is Trump by about 6 points. But overall, the approval rating of Harris is better than Biden. Reuters has it even. NPR has it 50-49 Harris. Fox News poll has Trump by one. And NBC News poll has it tied. So right now with a national poll, it is somewhat even. But we're about to find out what Kamala Harris is about, because we know that she was in support of a $10 trillion new Green Deal. We know she was for the abolishment of ICE. We know what she did on the border, visiting it once and a couple of Zoom calls with the Triangle countries. We know also that she's against fracking. So I can't wait to see the people of Pennsylvania get a chance to talk about that.
Yeah, look, I think once again, Brian, the handlers are going to shield her. They're going to treat her like Biden in the sense that she can't be trusted. She can't be trusted on her own. So it's going to have to be, certainly in the beginning, very tight situations where no questions or one question from a favorite reporter, that kind of thing, because she's liable to say the dumbest things of all. I mean, Biden, it was not so much what he said, that it was the trouble that he had saying it. With Harris, there'll be no trouble saying it, but it's going to be what she actually says that could blow up her candidacy. So I think they're going to really try to put a rag in her mouth to keep her from talking too much and shield her from the press. Look, I do think if I were of the mind that Joe Biden was a great president, or I hated Donald Trump so much that I'll vote for even a dead raccoon if it's on the D line, I would think that Harris will have more success than Biden was having, if only because she's less well known, she's younger, she's more attractive, she'll be able to show energy that Biden couldn't. But then I think that will become the issue, is does it stop there? How do Republicans force it deeper to where she has to make arguments, she has to take questions? I think that's going to be the challenge for the Republicans.
And
the Democrats
I think
are going to try to hide her, but can the Republicans smoke her out to really become engaged?
And why did you lie to us and tell us that Joe Biden was in such great shape? Now, even though he didn't come out and say my fitness for office is done, remember, this is Kamala Harris praising the intellect and the aptitude of Joe Biden. Cut to.
If there ever is a problem,
yeah,
do you think that you could go tell the American public? Do you think in your role that you're in a position to do that?
Of course, if necessary, but there's no need for that.
I think that age is more than a chronological fact, to be very frank with you.
Joe Biden is going to be fine, and let me tell you something. I work with Joe Biden every day. We will win re-election. We will win re-election.
I spend a lot of time with Joe Biden, be it in the Oval Office or the Situation Room. And I can tell you, this is someone who is tireless in terms of working on behalf of the American people.
It's all a lie. And she's going to be called on that.
Yes, yes. But you know what, Brian? Again, half the country won't care. Half the country doesn't care that they lie as long as you hate Donald Trump. That's the only requirement. And she will express that, I think, much more articulately than Biden did. She will say the most outrageous things about Trump, and the hating Trump Democrats will cheer like crazy. They'll have new energy from her energy in hating Trump. And so I think it's probably still going to be a close election unless Donald Trump can really, I think, break through. You and I have talked about this. I get all kinds of letters from people and calls, as I'm sure you do. Why does he act this way? Why does he do that? You know, I spoke to him right the day after the shooting, and I believe he really wants to unite the country, that he realizes personally this has all gone too far. Well, now I think it's essential. If he's going to win, he's going to have to change the tone, not just of his campaign, but of all Republicans. I think the party is now on the line. It's got a great opportunity, but it's also got an obligation. And I think if Donald Trump can do what he said he wants to do, which is lower the rhetoric, lower the hatred, and try to keep the country intact, I think he will win a big, big victory. So many people want him to do that I believe there are a lot of voters who are still sitting on the fence, waiting for him to say and behave in ways that they find acceptable for a president.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what you saw is the first half of his speech was great. The second half was his same old stump speech. And then I thought Saturday night was excellent. I watched almost all of it. I did the show live on Saturday night. It was fun. It was interesting. He was reflective, but didn't go into detail, just like he promised about the shooting, but talked overall. I took a bullet for democracy. White people wondering if I'd do that for democracy. But he just was having fun again. So I think he's got a shot at doing it. We'll see what happens, Michael. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. When we come back, I'll open up the phones, 1-866-408-7669. The hearings have begun for the Secret Service. I'll tell you what just happened. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
As we saw on Friday, there were many more Democrats who came out, but still a tiny percentage of Democrats who thought Joe Biden should step aside had publicly said that. And you started to see, for instance, in the op-ed piece in the Boston Globe by Congressman Mull, who's very close to Joe Biden, talking about the loss of mental acuity, you started to see what I think would have been a campaign to turn up the pressure on the president, to make it so painful for him to stay that he would have no choice but to turn. And I think Nancy Pelosi and others masterfully orchestrated this to turn up the pain just enough as a preview of coming attractions.
Right. And you know why? Because they knew about his cognitive failings. And Seth Moulton came out and said, you know, he mentored me, gave me a lot of great advice. And I walked up to him in D-Day in Normandy and he didn't know who I was. Devastating. So Nancy Pelosi says, I have more of these stories that could come out and make you look really bad. You'll have to step aside right away. So if you knew of these stories, you're 85, she's 83, by the way, and you held it, how is that helping the country when you have a addled president of the United States unable to do his job? It's all about your power. It's all about your party. Pelosi made it clear they would do it this way or the hard way. Steve, you're in Pensacola Beach. Steve.
Yeah, Brian, they keep using the excuse of, you know, he's a felon, Trump's a felon, and she's a prosecutor. Well, little do they know they're destroying themselves, because he did more for criminal justice reform than any president ever. And that 60-70% of, you know, Democratic voters either have somebody affected by a felon or somebody in their family that is a felon. So if I was the Trump camp, I would embrace that scenario.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Hey, by the way, quick announcement. Coming up this Saturday, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. Trying to get tickets at Sherman Theater. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. VIP opportunities are available. It is a patriotic show like no other, motivational, inspirational.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I was national co-chair for Kamala Harris for president. We're so damn excited now. My phone's blowing up. It's going crazy.
This is a woman who has great public values. She knows what she's in the game fighting for. She's fighting for people who are being left behind.
And she delivers. I think somebody like that is really frightening to Donald Trump.
The only person that I will get out there and break my back for and campaign for and believe in who is capable and qualified is Vice President Kamala Harris.
Look, it's not about what this country was or what it is, but it's about what this country can be. Donald Trump cannot do that because he's a prisoner of his age. Kamala Harris can.
Yeah. Okay. Those are people getting behind, as predicted. As soon as Kamala Harris was going to be the presumptive nominee, people are going to talk about how great she was. The next phase would be the reason why so many things went wrong in Afghanistan, how the Ukrainian invasion couldn't be stopped, how China continued to muscle out the Philippines overseas, how the border fell apart, is because Joe Biden wouldn't let her do anything. He wouldn't let her implement anything. He let her office His office was insular and wouldn't let his people do anything. We're not going to talk about that she hired 47 people and she was hired. Only five are left. We're not going to talk about in the similar period, Joe Biden hired 38. He's got 18 left. So we're not going to talk about that right now. I will say this before I bring in my next guest, Julian Epstein. I'm watching the Secret Service director speak right now, and it is so aggravating. She won't answer the question, did Donald Trump's team asked for more Secret Service, as the Washington Post confirmed, and did you in fact reject it? She comes back and says, well, not for this event. And they said, did you know that the shooter, there was a shooter on the roof? Did you know that person had a gun? We're only 9 days out. We don't really have an answer for that yet. Really? We don't have an answer for that yet. Did you talk to the agents? Unfortunately, there weren't that many agents there. Have you talked to them yet and when they thought they could have a gun and the range finder? So she's there to survive. She's not there to answer questions. That's what drives the American people crazy. So the other big news happened at 1:46 in the afternoon on Sunday. Joe Biden said, I will not run for re-election. Makes people wonder, can you continue to govern the country? Julian Epstein served as chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee, staff director to the House Oversight Committee, longtime Democrat. Julian, is this a good day for Democrats?
That's a good question, Brian. It depends how you define good. In relative terms to where the Democrats have been for most of 2024, it's a good day because it's the turning over a new page. So that's a good day. The question is this as good a day as it could be for the Democrats? And I think not. I don't think Kamala Harris is the best candidate the Democrats have. I think it is going to be the consensus of the elites because it's what makes the elites unified. But Kamala has, you know, has considerable baggage. She has never shown outside of California any ability to generate any enthusiasm amongst voters. She has had one major issue, policy portfolio, which has been immigration, which I think has been a dramatic failure. We have all seen her perform on the national stage with the word salads, unburdened. See the possibility of what can be unburdened by what has been, sort of all of these, you know, sort of pseudo profundities that seem a little bit absurd. As you point out, I think properly, there has been a lot of chaos in her office when she was running for president and as vice president. So I don't think it's the strongest candidate. I think it is sort of going to be the consensus amongst the elites. But, you know, a lot of this also, Brian, is incorporates the conceit of the elites right now, which I think is really out of touch, which is that Biden has had a successful presidency. He has passed three pieces of legislation primarily that Democrats love to celebrate. The public has no idea what that legislation is. And what the public mostly sees under the Biden administration is inflation, which has robbed them of any income gains during the Biden administration.
The border.
The border, which has been a disaster. Crime, Democrats like to argue crime
Afghanistan.
Is coming down. Actually, what you're seeing with crime is you're seeing crime still spiking in blue cities where you've had the progressive deprosecution programs. And Afghanistan, yeah, I mean, you go down the line. Look, Israel has not been handled well, I don't think. Iran is about to get a nuclear bomb. Israel's being fired at from five different corners right now. So I think you've seen chaos. You could point to chaos abroad. You can point to chaos domestically. I don't think you've had a particularly successful Biden administration, but the elites keep going out there and saying, you know, Kamala is the rightful heir of what has been a successful administration. And I think that's delusionary. I mean, if you look at the
You already have 153. This is to start the day. Democrats in the House are backing her. Now, 32 senators. I think another one just jumped on board. And J.B. Pritzker, who's supposed to be somebody that might put his hat in the ring in Illinois and Chicago, has just endorsed her. So you had 23 starting the day. And now you have Pritzker in there. She's going to be the nominee. And even if Obama doesn't weigh in, even if Schumer and Pelosi don't weigh in, and Hakeem Jeffries, they want to make it seem like it's fair. But there's no way this is an open process.
Well, you know, we talked about this before. You remember I came out saying that Joe Biden should get out of the race in March of 2023 and complaining about the groupthink inside the Democratic Party and how the groupthink makes you stupid. You know, this is just another example of elite groupthink on the Democratic side, and I don't think it produces the best results for the party. But it's something that advances the interest of the elites within the party. I think you're right. I think it's a done deal, but I don't think it's the best process of getting us where we need to be. The Democrats need to go back to the political center where they were a generation ago. Remember under Clinton, you know, we were for secure borders. We were for balancing the budget. We were for ending welfare as we know it. We were for paring back affirmative action to make it consistent with what the Supreme Court had said it needed to be. It had been a party that was for school uniforms to bring back sort of discipline within the schools. It was for a lot of those things. The party has changed. And what you're seeing now, Brian, is if you look at the data that came out last week, this whole demography is destiny, that the Democrats could cobble together young voters, voters of color, and working class voters. All of that is sort of going by the wayside.
Right.
Before Biden got out, you saw the black vote had gone from 92% in 2020 to 68%, according to the Wall Street Journal poll. Numerous polls showing the Hispanic vote split. Working class vote, Biden, Trump now has an advantage of anywhere between 17% and 23% of the voters, and young voters for the first time identified more Republican than Democrat. So the coalition that the Democrats have built since 2012 is really starting to fall apart, both because I think voters have not seen the success of the economic policies, and they don't like certainly the social policies on immigration, crime.
So let's take a look at this now. They got $96 million left in the bank. Trump's got $128 million. They evidently got $50 million since Joe Biden steps aside. He stepped aside kicking and screaming. The question is, can he continue to be president of the United States for 5 months? That's going to be a big question. The Republicans should watch it because it's maybe better for the country if he steps aside. But if you put her in the White House and get people to have that visual like she's an incumbent, that could make it tougher to fight her, to compete against her, don't you think?
I think both things are true. I think there are real questions about whether President Biden has the capacity to serve out his next several months in office. I think we've seen evidence that he may not have that. But I think as a political matter, once she if she were to become president before the election, I think that would help her for sure.
Yeah, I guess we're gonna see what happens. Right now, we're watching the United States Secret Service director refuse to answer any legitimate questions about the assassination attempt on President Trump. And we're seeing Jamie Raskin use this time to talk about guns. So it's just incredible. Do they know that Joe Biden's name was also on that hit list and Attorney General Merrick Garland was on this guy's hit list? Doesn't it frustrate you that they can't even be bipartisan about an assassination?
Yeah, again, as I say, this is not the Democratic Party that I grew up in. You know, we've talked about this before as well, Brian. One of the real sort of canaries in the coal mine about this administration was after Afghanistan, which was just an embarrassing, botched withdrawal that compromised our national security, nobody was fired. And the fact that the president wasn't able to find people responsible for that mismanagement was just extraordinary. Here, this assassination attempt against President Trump, that is just inexplicable. I mean, the fact that there was an aerial support, the fact that they had had the shooter in their sights for minutes, if not, for longer, the fact that there was that the what seems to be now repeated requests for more coverage for the Trump candidacy was not met by the Secret Service. I tweeted the day after this happened, one of the tests for Biden will be whether they fire the director of the Secret Service. I mean, this is just inexcusable. The countless failures is just inexcusable. And the unwillingness of this administration to step up and fire those that were responsible, fire the leadership and make the changes, I think just sort of sends a message of incompetence to the rest of the public.
Look at the way he resigned. Look at the way he resigned, Julian. He didn't even go on camera to do what LBJ did and say, look, I'm going to finish out strong. We got a lot of stuff on the table. I feel as though it's time for Kamala. I think she's ready. Whatever you want to say. So you got to just do it on camera. He doesn't have press conferences. They don't give releases. They're about to pick a candidate without even talking to other Democrats. So they just seem to be doing their own thing and leaving the public out of it without any regrets.
Yeah, it's the arrogance of elites. And it's not the way I think the party ought to be running. I think Republicans are gleeful about it because I think this kind of insular decision making by elites that does not really take into account what voters are thinking necessarily ultimately ends up hurting the party. I mean, that's why Biden didn't drop out. You know, all of the elites inside the Democratic Party were perpetrating the cover up about Biden's condition for a long time. Right. And very few of us, you know, I got a lot of flack for sort of speaking my mind about it. But it turns out the dissenters are obviously correct or are often correct about these things. I don't think Kamala is the strongest candidate that they could be putting out there, but it will be the consensus of elites because you don't want to sort of, you know, you don't want to knock out a woman of color. I get that. I think many of us would love nothing more than to see the ascension of a really competent woman of color who could lead the country. I think that would be a fantastic day. I think it would say great things about this country. It doesn't mean that Kamala Harris is that person.
Right. I just want the best person. And I think very few people care at this point by gender and race. I mean, we were talking more about Senator Tim Scott, just about who he was. He's two-term senator, gets along with President Trump great, was doing criminal justice with the opportunity zones. And very few people, even on or off camera or off mic, were saying to me, oh, it would be great for the president to run with a black guy. No, he gets along with Timmy. He calls him Timmy great, just like he likes J.D. And I just think the whole DEI, we're done with it. And I think that the reason why you have Kamala Harris is because this president said, give me a woman, give me a minority. The background checks led one person left standing, the person they called him a racist, and that's Kamala Harris, who Jill Biden reportedly can't stand. And now that's going to be the standard bearer for an administration, even though for a party, even though she's really accomplished almost nothing as a vice president. So unlike Dick Cheney and unlike even Joe Biden as a vice president.
Yeah, I agree. I think the day in which we've decided to pick people because of their race or gender, I would hope we would be past that. And I agree that we want the best person. I was just making the point it would be great if we had a system where, you know, you would have the ascension of people from different backgrounds because of their merit and not because of their race or their gender or their ethnicity. But look,
again, and you know what? I think Julian, we're seeing it. I'm looking at J.D. Vance, meager means, marries a woman of Indian descent who is unbelievably accomplished. She's going to be on the national stage, Usha. If she wants to have her own political career, she could. I look at Vivek Ramaswamy. I don't care if he gets one vote. I know Nikki Haley doesn't even like him a lot, but he's an extremely bright guy. He's not going anywhere. I'm looking at Nikki Haley, too, grows up in South Carolina, a traditional Indian-American woman. So things are happening. If you want to accomplish things in our country, those pathways are there for you.
Oh, look, there was a you could look at, I think, the average income broken out by race, and there are an ethnicity. There are probably 12 to 15 groups that are doing better than white Americans, starting with Indian Americans, Chinese, Vietnamese. You're going down the line. So this notion that people of different backgrounds
right.
don't have the ability to succeed in this country, that's just silly. You can just debunk it just on that data
and
alone.
I would love,
there's lots of data that debunks it as well.
I would love both parties to agree on that. Julian Epstein, thanks so much. It's an exciting time. We'll keep you abreast of everything. Julian Epstein, thank you. Meanwhile, the United States Secret Service Director is at a hearing right now trying to describe what her people need. She's got a $3 billion budget, 8,000 men and women on staff, and it doesn't seem to be enough. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There are reports that several agents assigned to the rally on July 13th were temporary agents, agents not normally assigned to President Trump. Is that accurate?
What I can tell you is that the agents that were assigned to former President Trump are Secret Service agents that provide close protection to him. And that was what was actual on that day.
How many temporary agents were there that day?
Quite frequently, sir, during campaign events, the Secret Service utilizes agents from HSI or the Department of Homeland Security.
Had the Trump detail requested additional resources?
What I can tell you is that for the event on July 13th, the details that were the assets that were requested for that day were given.
Were any of those requests denied to President Trump's detail after you knew about the Iranian threat?
What I can tell you, again, I don't know the specifics, is that there are times when we can fill a request. It doesn't necessarily have to be with a Secret Service asset or resource. We can fill that request with locally available assets.
So I talked to people that this is going on right now, and Stephen Lynch, to his credit, Democrat from Massachusetts, is putting politics aside. I wouldn't think this has to be a case, and is actually asking the United States Secret Service Director some legitimate questions, not talking about guns, not talking about AR-15s, not talking about Pennsylvania, the right to carry or anything, because it doesn't matter. It is how you're going to protect VIPs and presidential candidates from RFK to Trump. To Biden, and also on the list, as I mentioned before, was Joe Biden and Attorney General Merrick Garland was on this kid's hit list. Will you understand that the problems that they were having with Trump, I hope, were the same problems that they would have with Biden? So Stephen Lynch has had some legitimate questions. The fact is, they would ask this question just moments ago. Why was he with a rangefinder? Well, you're allowed to. It's not prohibited. Well, did anyone ask him, why do you need a rangefinder at a political rally? No. Ugh.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. We are back in New York City, 1211 6th Avenue. Yes, we're at 48th and 6th. We're pretty much... New York has really embraced us as we come back. And I say us because Kennedy's in the studio dancing because she comes from a musical background. She took music in school.
I did, Brian. Thank you for acknowledging that.
Bobby Brack's going to be with us. He's a writer for OutKick. He's going to weigh in on with the media's how they're covering this major event after major event. Madison Allworth. Hey, Pete, where is Madison today? What is she covering?
She'll be in studio.
Oh, she'll be in studio.
Yep.
And do you know what she's covering today? Because I saw her in the elevator, and I mistakenly, Kennedy, just went with small talk and said, what are you covering today? Mm-hmm. So I'm really at a deficit now for the audience because I don't know exactly what she's covering
today. Did you call her doll face? Because I told you to stop doing that to your female co-hosts.
You're confusing me with Sinatra? I mean, didn't Sinatra say that all the time? So can you believe that what's happening a week ago?
Hey there, Dollface. Nice gams.
What are the gams? Thighs?
Legs.
Oh.
Yeah.
So Saturday, we have the assassination attempt. The investigation right now is going on, and we already have some questions. Democrats and Republicans are asking questions. This should be a bipartisan hearing, but for the most part, Democrats are asking about guns, and Republicans are saying, how the hell did you let this happen? And yes, why did you lie about saying that you denied Donald Trump additional resources? She says, oh, wait a second. I just said for this event, no, there's been no request. Overall, there may have been a request, but we have different ways of answering those requests. And my way of answering this request would be no, that would be the way.
She is in so far over her head. It is so obvious in this hearing. She's withering Democrats who are going on their little anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment tirade. They're obfuscating on her behalf. This is not the time for it.
You know, Joe Biden was on that hit list, and so was A.G. Yes. Merrick Garland.
Yeah.
Same
and,
guy.
And so were Mike Johnson and Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah.
So they have to be incredibly careful, and Democrats should have just as many pointed questions because they're going to have a different nominee now. Like, our politics is so agitated and shaken up, they have to make absolutely certain, like, that glaring failure could happen anywhere at any rally.
Do you know that he was in contact, the 20-year-old shooter, with people in three different countries on a regular basis, in New Zealand, in Germany, and in Denmark? Belgium. And no one knows exactly why. It was an encrypted phone. He had another phone, and he made one call right before he went up there. Do you know that Senator Ron Johnson yesterday said a guy in a gray suit got on the roof and went up to the agents who were taking picture of his blown-off head, and agent state cops, and says, you need to send me those pictures. Nobody knows who this guy in the gray suit was. So they have a phone number. They're following up on it. A little bit of a mystery. And then they denied that Donald Trump had repeated requests for more Secret Service. These guys are way too spread out. They have no days off working 20 hours a day. And they said, no, the Mayorkas said that is not true. And then the Washington Post Saturday said is true. Four different sources.
Yes, including her spokesperson at Secret Service. So obviously, and then Benny Thompson, the Democrat leader from Mississippi, who's a congressman.
Ran the January 6th committee.
He was the one who put forth legislation to take away Trump's Secret Service detail. And then it was his staffer who was fired because it was like Saturday night that she was like, oh, it's a shame the guy missed.
Yeah.
Oops, I didn't say that. I don't condone violence, but better luck next time.
Here's what Jim Jordan had to say. Cut 47.
Were you guessing or lying when you said you didn't turn down requests from President Trump's detail?
Neither, sir, and I appreciate the question.
Well, what were you doing? Because those statements don't jive.
So what I can tell you is that for the event in Butler, there were no requests that were denied. As far as requests...
Well, maybe they got tired of asking. Maybe you turned them down so darn much they said, not worth asking. How many times did you turn them down ahead of that?
I think that it is important to distinguish between what some people may view as a denial an asset or a request.
Well, Mr. Guglielmi, your spokesperson, he said he acknowledged the Secret Service had turned down some requests. I'm asking how many?
A denial of a request does not equal a vulnerability.
Obviously, it does. I mean, clearly, the outcome proves that line false. Because, yes, he was denied requests, and he was almost assassinated. He was within a half an inch of being assassinated. So
right.
That is the one job they have.
Right.
So she has to acknowledge something. But,
yeah.
You know, she's not. She's like, oh, I'd really like the answer to that question myself. Well, gosh, if only you were the director of the Secret Service and you could demand that information.
Yeah, it is incredible. And now, by the way, there's so much video available. The reporters are leading the investigation because they refuse to give regular updates to the American people. And Kennedy, we walk around in the same circles. We meet everyday people. They have their own opinions and theories, conspiracy theories about what happened. They let the vulnerability drop. They wanted in some way for him to be killed. This was an intentional depletion of resources because they want him taken out. And because the Secret Service will not brief regularly and answer questions from reporters, people are feeling free to start with their own conclusions, which I admit, on some ways, there's always going to be conspiracy theories with things like this.
Yes, but if you leave a vacuum, then conspiracy theories will proliferate.
So you like Stephen Lynch. I did too, the congressman from Massachusetts.
Yes, he was the only Democrat so far who has asked, you know, the necessary and pointed questions, and specifically about what happened in Butler. And not, so if more people had handguns, would it be more dangerous for other people? It's right. Like, what the hell kind of question is that? What kind of a time waste is that when we are in the middle of a crisis?
He put up school shootings and all the big shootings. He goes, why do you care about that and not about this? I don't know. Let's think about that for a second. Here is Stephen Lynch, congressman from Massachusetts, Democrat, 49.
Did he have a range finder? There were some reports that the individual had a rangefinder. That would certainly raise my suspicion. Did he have a rangefinder?
Yes, he did. But may I explain that at a number of our sites, especially when you're at outdoor venues, a rangefinder is not a prohibited item. It is sometimes an item that is brought in by individuals if you're going to be in the back.
Did anybody confront him on that? Anybody ask him questions? What are you doing with the rangefinder? Anybody confront him on his presence where he was in proximity to the president?
So again, to my knowledge, I believe that was the process that was taking place, was to locate the individual.
Did they confront him? Did they go up to him? Did they talk to him?
I do not have those details at this time.
Those are important details.
Yeah, when you think, then he went on to say, you know, you keep saying, we had this crisis 2 years ago, and you said you needed people. Do you need people? He's like, yes. How many you got now? 8,000. What do you need? Four times he had to ask, what do you need? He goes, 9,500. Okay, that's a big deal. Why don't you open up with, listen, you want me to go cover all these people? I got four legitimate candidates out there or three legitimate candidates out there. I want 1,500 more people. Just give me your idea what you need. Are you hiring private contractors because of that? Do you need more than $3 billion? You got $3 billion.
Yeah, are you delegating to local law enforcement and not communicating with them? So there's no channel
There was
of
no communication. You heard that, right? There was no communication
so
between
them. So that's the solution?
Right. So you had better communication between the Giants' offensive coordinator, their head coach, and their quarterback than there was between the president detail and the state cops, who I guess were in charge of that roof for some reason was outside the perimeter.
How could 130 yards be outside the perimeter?
I don't know.
That I don't understand.
Either do I. So that is
crazy.
I mean,
it's like that's a straight shot. That is a straight and clear gimme. And that's not in the perimeter?
You know,
one thought, oh, you know what, man,
that building,
that would be an easy one. Like my one-eyed grandma could make that shot.
Right. And you don't have a one-eyed grandma.
Not anymore, Brian. Right. Thanks to you.
Right. More on that later. And then what you do is you put a security guard up there. I mean, at the very least, just make sure no one's on their chest with an AR-15. Can you do that? Here's a sketch of a gun. Make sure they're not doing that. The other thing is I did not know. It was the second sniper team that took out this guy with an obstructive view with one shot, or else he had four magazines and what they think is a cell phone to detonate the explosives in his car. You talk about devastating how lucky we got. I mean, one person's dead, two were wounded. They seem to be okay. The president gets his ear shot off, and yet we feel lucky because this guy was going to be up there for a year and a day if we didn't have this great sniper.
It all adds up to something. So as I was watching her testify today, I thought to myself, what would a Secret Service director do? What would her behavior be if this were something ominous and bad and maybe what people would call an inside job? How would she be acting? This is how she would be acting.
Right. So we'll talk about that. The other thing is this little thing like the President of the United States decided not to run for re-election 107 days before he is going to be standing for a vote. And I love the way people are saying that Joe Biden is so selfless. He's always been about being selfless.
Is that selfless? Right. I think selfless would have been 2022.
Oh, right.
You know what? I'm not going to run again. I'm gonna shepherd this thing and hand it off to the very best person. We're going to have a robust primary process so voters really get to decide who the best person is to lead this country and lead this party.
He is anything but selfless. He stood there defiantly, even since the debates, and said, I am not going anywhere.
I have a cognitive test every day.
Right. He failed spectacularly in almost every single interview and every single event. There's been things to point out that made people feel uncomfortable, and nothing from the debate made people feel comfortable. And he sat there on Saturday and finally gave in and we got the announcements 1:46 on Sunday. And they said, you show me a poll in what I can win. And they said to him, Tom Donilon and others, Mike Donilon and others said, I can't. And then he said, okay. Essentially,
that's
I assume.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. He's been raging
two
ever
days
since.
After the RNC ends, 3 days, and that's when you decide?
Yeah. So the polls are now Kamala. They're going to be selling us on Kamala. And here's what they're saying about Kamala. She is just fantastic. I know what you think, but here's what they think. Cut 12.
I was national co-chair for Kamala Harris for president. We're so damn excited now. My phone's blowing up. It's going crazy.
This is a woman who has great public values. She knows what she's in the game fighting for. She's fighting for people who are being left behind.
And she delivers. I think somebody like that is really frightening to Donald Trump.
The only person that I will get out there and break my back for and campaign for and believe in right. who is capable and qualified is Vice President Kamala Harris.
And that was Congresswoman Crockett. But here's the thing, Kennedy. This is
Jasmine Crockett. She's the one who just got in the fight with MTG.
Right. OMG. Yeah, that's true. But I will say this, she was also all in for Joe Biden. Actually, the only person I can get out there is with the vice president. But this is the next phase. The next phase is the only reason she wasn't more effective is Joe Biden didn't let her do anything.
Yeah. He gave her the hardest jobs because he's racist and misogynistic.
And he wouldn't take any of her advice at the border. She wanted to do more. She was so frustrated she wouldn't go. Right. And then, you know, when it came to abortion, right, she loves abortion. Abortion's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to abortion clinics. I'm going to spend the day there. So she's talking a lot about that. She did nothing for voter rights. And basically, if you look at her schedule, there's nothing on it. Here's what Donald Trump said after hearing, not knowing yet, but thinking that something's going on. Cut 14.
From the moment we take back the White House from crooked Joe Biden and Kamala, I call her Laughing Kamala. You ever watch her laugh? She's crazy. You know, you can tell a lot by a laugh. No, she's crazy. She's nuts. She's not as crazy as Nancy Pelosi, crazy Nancy. Did you see Nancy Pelosi is selling out Biden now? Did you see? She turned on him like a dog.
Well, within 24 hours, she was out, and they say they have a game plan for her. Let's see it.
What is it?
The game plan is let her talk.
Do it, yeah, because I've seen her talk. Well, I've seen her talk about the significance of the passage of time.
Right.
And how significant that is, because time does pass.
Right. Also, I know they have redundancy in her speeches. She is against fracking. She is in total. Oh, she's going to make her own the border. She also is for a $10 trillion new Green Deal. We couldn't tolerate the $369 billion deal that passed. She wanted the $10 trillion new Green Deal. So we also know that internationally, she's going to have to own the Afghanistan withdrawal. She's going to have to own the Ukrainian invasion. She's going to have to own the lack of support for Israel.
Her stepdaughter renounced her Jewishness after Hamas attacked Israel.
Her sister's daughter.
Oh, I thought it was Doug's daughter.
Was it Doug's daughter?
Okay. The one who dresses like a weirdo and might be a furry.
What's a furry again?
I'll tell you.
Thinks they're an animal?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, that's good. If you think that President Biden was hedging on Israel, you got to listen to what Kamala Harris has been saying. Don't move. More with Kennedy. We return. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A few more minutes with Kennedy. Kennedy, your thoughts right now. It looks like J.B. Pritzker is the latest governor who might be a contender or a competition for Kamala Harris to say, no, I endorse her. just about everybody has endorsed her except Whitmer, who says, I'm not interested in running. So is it basically a formality?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. And it's a shame because maybe all these people who really want to be president realize there's just not enough time. And also the DNC can't release the money that Biden, Harris and the campaign has raised. That can only be released to Harris. So they would have to refund all the donors, $200 million, and hope that they redonate it to whoever. But Harris, because her name's on the ticket, they can actually transfer it to her.
So she's going to get it, and I imagine there's going to be a virtual coronation that was supposed to be for Joe Biden because of Ohio. That could be coming in the first week in August. And then in the 19th, August 19th, do you feel as though there's a potential there for momentum? And do you overall feel as though Trump's going to have a harder time winning now?
I think it definitely changes the race. I don't think we know whether or not he's going to have a harder time or an easier time. I think that he should have had a more disciplined speech at the RNC. I think
first half was fine.
A tighter messaged speech would have been far, far more effective because now you have independents in play who had completely given up on Joe Biden. They're going to give Kamala Harris a second look. And until we know what that second look looks like, where the chips fall in terms of polling, it does change the race.
Today, the vice president's going to be at the White House handling the NCAA coronation as a champion's lunch. It's going to be this afternoon. Whole world's going to be watching. J.D. Vance is going to be speaking at about 1:30 today. This is going to be – it's happening right now. Kamala Harris will be there because the president's got COVID. Man, how fortuitous for them, and I feel bad for the champions. No one's going to be talking about that.
Absolutely not. Has anyone seen the president?
No.
No pictures? Like Dana Perino made that point last night. We need a picture. We need a picture of him signing the letter. This is an historic moment for his presidency and for the country. You know, we've never really been in times like this. The closest parallel is 1968. But as you know, Lyndon Johnson got out of the race much, much sooner than this.
And we filmed it. We didn't even use videotape. We used film.
We did.
We did. And we still have it today. So they don't really have press conferences. They don't really inform us. They don't tell the 14 million people who voted for him. Doesn't really matter. So this is par for the course. You like my golf reference?
I do, Tiger Woods. Thank you.
Back in a moment.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is somebody that you love. This is somebody that you care about. This is somebody who was there for you. I just know that I love this man. I care about this man.
President Biden has announced he will stand down from the race. I'm going to read the statement here on my phone. I worked for him for a year and a half, and he is a remarkable person, a remarkable president.
President Biden will be remembered fondly for it. I do think it's an incredibly selfless thing that he did.
What a man. What a patriot. I'm just blown away by the sacrifice and the patriotism that this moment embodies.
My goodness. He's stepping aside, but you cannot say he did it out of patriotism. He had to be forced, harangued by the higher-ups from Barack Obama to Nancy Pelosi to Hakeem Jeffries. They pushed him out. But if you want to well up and get teary-eyed, I just don't think it's in the right place. Bobby Barak's here, writer for Outkick.com. He's going to be filling in for Will Kaner's podcast today. Bobby, you surprised by that reaction, not acknowledging how hard he had to be pushed.
Yeah, and it's so dishonest. We saw Van Jones act like this was Biden's choice. We know it's not. There's been calls for Biden to drop out ever since the debate. He's been defiant. He won't. It wasn't until Obama, Pelosi, Schumer got involved and pretty much forced his hand that he's now stepping aside. This was not his choice. And Van Jones, who used to work for Obama, certainly knows that.
So let me check. Let me just inform everyone what's going on right now. You have the investigation into the assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life happening. Most Democrats start off by saying guns are bad, and then they ask legitimate questions on the Secret Service director who has almost no answers. Republicans are aggressively with a detailed timeline trying to get answers, and she's saying we're only 9 days into an investigation, so that's not going to suffice. On the other side, you have a champion NCAA champions reception at the White House with the president with COVID. The vice president's taken over, and that vice president is the leading contender to be the nominee. J.P. Pritzker, over the last hour, has signed on to support her. Shapiro signed on to support her. the governor of Cooper of North Carolina support her. There's outside Mark Kelly. I don't see anybody else who could actually run against her. This is going to be her nomination.
Absolutely. And we know she's the only candidate who can inherit the war chest, which is obviously a big part of this. I absolutely think it will be Kamala Harris. But I think, Brian, the key now is who does she pick as vice president? And sometimes you say, well, why does it really matter? We saw an NBC report that Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, is on a short list. He's pretty popular in Pennsylvania. If she were to pick him and that helps her potentially win that state, that gives Democrats a huge leg up because according to most recent polling, Biden was on pace to lose Pennsylvania. We know how important Pennsylvania is to determining who wins the election.
Right. But the problem is, in their world, not my world, that if you have a Jewish governor and you're already losing the Jewish vote, the Arab vote
right.
in places like Michigan and other places, and if you have a Jewish running mate, it should not matter in America, but sadly it will. And also, does Governor Shapiro want to sign on to an administration that seems to, in many ways, turned on Israel?
Yeah, and it's a great point because we always hear for a while that conservatives in the GOP are anti-Semitic, but we saw with the elite colleges and members of the squad, it's actually the American left who seems to have an issue often with Jewish Americans because they look at the world through the lens of the oppressed and the oppressors, and they think Jews are among the oppressors, at least relatively
right.
in recent history. So I'm with you, but I think for her sake, Josh Shapiro gives her the most upside by far for that reason.
So we're talking to Bobby Barak for Vowkick. You write a story about get ready. Every time you, every time there's an exchange with Trump, they're going to say he's sexist. Every time there's an exchange, they're going right. to say he's racist. And Senator Joe Manchin kind of handled that. He's a sensible Democrat. Whatever you think of him, the guy's a moderate. There doesn't seem to be any left. Cut 22. Listen to this exchange on Face the Nation.
But black women are the backbone of the Democratic Party. If you bypass the vice president, Kamala Harris, doesn't that undermine
this is not about race and
support?
Gender, Margaret.
It's no, not, but it's about votes.
Well, it's
and
not about
turnout.
Race. Okay, but the bottom line is 51% of those people who are participating in voting in process in America are registered independents. They're not registered Democrat or Republican, only 25% Republican and 23% Democrats. These are people that want issues solved. So worrying about whose agenda and what race you are, other than what the issues are, I was raised in a family and also an understanding that that's not my enemy on the other side. Democrats were basically held accountable and responsible. We are basically fiscally responsible and socially compassionate. And I don't believe the government should be your provider.
So that's a different attitude than you get
right.
almost any other Democrat.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Very well said, I thought. But yeah, the race card, look, we know how important that is to the Democrat Party. And Brian, I was looking at the headlines yesterday when Biden endorsed Kamala Harris. It kept saying Kamala Harris, potentially the first black woman. Biden endorses black woman. Why does that matter? Why do we have to keep saying Kamala Harris is a black woman? And I wrote an instant analysis piece. We're just get ready. Question Kamala Harris, racist. Question her resume as a DA, racist. Not voting for, racist. That is going to be the message of the party. Trump's age, sexism, and racism, and maybe abortion. It's
Absolutely.
Going to only divide this country further.
So anyone who thinks it's going to be an open process, you could pretend it's an open process, and I guess technically you can make a run.
Right.
But you'll have almost no support. Governor Gavin Newsom's not going to do it.
No.
I don't think Mark Kelly's going to do it. I don't think Andy Beshear says he's not. He's endorsing him. So Mike Allen said James Carville even realized it. He's of Axios. That they got to go and make them. They got to make the move with Kamala. Cut 25.
But I'm told that now this is likely to move very fast. James Carville, the raging Cajun who had been calling for a series of regional primaries, he told me yesterday that he now sees very little time or appetite for any kind of an extended process, whether it's debates, whether it's mini primaries, whether it's flash primaries. He says there's just not that time. He said the vibe now is let's go, and the let's go for the Democratic Party is with Vice President Harris.
So where is she vulnerable? How is Harris vulnerable, Bobby?
We saw in the 2020 primary, she was vulnerable everywhere, right? She bowed out before the calendar officially moved to 2020. But I think President Trump is going to have a lot of material to work with. A couple of years ago, we saw Kamala Harris say nobody should be in jail for marijuana charges. Yet when she was DA, she was very hard on those who were arrested for marijuana possession. So I think that is going to be I think she's very unlikable. She's never been a particularly likable candidate. Nobody really is supposed to say it, but she wouldn't be vice president if it weren't for being born a black woman when the party pressured Biden to pick a black woman. So I think her resume is where Trump's going to be able to hammer her most.
Yeah, I think so, too. I also think the fact is that she is against fracking. She did a terrible job at the border. Please tell me about your accomplishment overseas. And remember her laughing off the questions with the Polish president.
Yeah.
Just laugh at a time in which Ukraine was inflamed with war and Russian bombs. So I think it's interesting to see what kind of game plan they have. Evelyn, Jason Miller says they've been working on it. He's Trump's senior advisor, communications. Cut 35.
The fact of the matter is that Kamala Harris is going to own everything from the Harris-Biden administration over the past 3.5 years. And whether it be the record-setting illegal immigration, whether it be the sky-high inflation, the chaos all across the globe, she has to own all of that.
So that's true. She's going to have to own this.
Well, and according to a recent Gallup poll, economy's number one, voters' mind. Borders number two. She was supposed to be responsible to the border, which I think might be, after Afghanistan, the most shameful part of the Biden administration.
So right now, Kamala Harris is about two people away from the microphone. It's Champions Day for the NCAA at the White House lawn. Kamala Harris, the vice president, taking over the president, who is still sick with COVID, reportedly. So he cannot do it. All eyes are on her, not the champions, not the athletes, but you got to expect it. She's declared that she's going to be running for president, and she is putting hundreds of calls and has gotten 24 now Democratic governors. I think 34 or 53, excuse me, 34 senators and hundreds of congresspeople already backing her. I think this is about a done deal. Evidently, she's raised about $50 million in just a few hours. If she says something important, we'll cut in. And lastly, what do you want to hear from Joe Biden when he does speak?
Why he decided to change his mind. For 2 weeks, he's been, as he says, defiant. He was not going to drop out of the race. He said he had the best chance of beating Donald Trump. How can he explain this? What changed in his mind?
Do you think the media goes back to singing the praises of Kamala Harris, or they ask the same tough questions they suddenly were asking on Biden?
They're going to champion Harris like we haven't seen since Barack Obama. The American left, the corporate media, they hate Donald Trump far more than they love America. And they're going to use all the buzzwords, race, sexism, threat to democracy, fascist. I think the media is going to be fully behind her, and it's going to be all anti-Trump.
Outkicks Bobby Brock. So who's your first guest with Will Cain?
Going to be Sage Steele tomorrow.
Sage Steele tomorrow. What are you doing tomorrow?
We're doing it today and tomorrow. Today we're going to react to the breaking news. Tomorrow I'm going to bring on Sage Steele for about 30 minutes to break everything down.
Bye, Barack. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, Brian.
All right, when we come back, Madison Allworth working this story right here in New York City. She'll be with us in studio. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And I first came to know President Biden through his son, Bo. We worked together as attorneys general in our states. And back then, Bo would often tell me stories about his dad. He would talk about the kind of father and the kind of man that Joe Biden is. The qualities that Bo revered in his father are the same qualities that I have seen every day in our president. His honesty, his integrity, his commitment to his faith and his family, his big heart, and his love, deep love of our country. And I am firsthand witness that every day our President Joe Biden fights for the American people, and we are deeply, deeply grateful for his service to our nation.
Vice President Harris, moments ago, just in at the White House, at the on the White House lawn, glorifying the exploits of NCAA champions. It's a champions of celebration, luncheon, whatever they call it, barbecue. And right now, all eyes are on her because she declared that she wants to be the next president of the United States. And she's worked feverishly behind the scenes to get as many people from her party on the same page to make her nomination a virtual lock, which looked like it is. Madison Allworth is listening in with us. When we heard those comments for the first time, Fox Business correspondent, but she does everything for all channels at all times. Madison, your reaction to her lauding President Biden, because she's going to be asked about what you knew about his cognitive decline. That's going to be a refrain.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, she had a front row seat to the presidency as the VP. So there's no doubt that there will be questions there. And I think she'll have to reckon with that. But also, when you look at the party as a whole, she has the backing of the president, who really, up until this Sunday, was, you know, will he or won't he drop out? He still holds a ton of sway in the party. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's endorsed her, you're starting to see the party fall in line behind her.
Right. And so Trump, maybe she does a little bit better against Trump. But now it's time for both sides to start attacking each other, come up with their game plans. Evidently, the Trump team came up with it. The way this went down, according to Axios, the president worked with longtime closer advisor, his chief, Mike Donilon, to draft the letter. Steve Ricchetti, another longtime advisor, during the time when he was dating back to when he was vice president, he was charged with organizing the mechanics of the announcement. So he started working on Saturday at 1:46 on Sunday. Madison, he resigns and then comes back and endorses Kamala Harris. Should we look into that?
I mean, I think you have to. I know that when I saw the announcement just before 2 p.m. it was very notable that in the letter, he thanked Kamala Harris as being a great partner. So she was in the letter, but very clearly just being thanked. It took 27 minutes to then endorse her as his pick to be the next president of the United States. A friend joked with me that we know Biden is not very fast these days, but things like this is all calculated. So that gap in time, I don't know, you know, how much we need to look into the minutes per minute, but the fact that in his resignation letter, in his letter announcing him dropping out, him not endorsing her in the same letter, I do think that does signify something.
So many rank and file found out when the post was actually put up, maybe a minute before, including Anita Dunn and her husband, Bob Bauer, which is significant because they're the ones they're getting a lot of blame for preparing or not preparing him for the debate. And Bob Bauer played Donald Trump. And yet they brought him out there. He was exhausted. He was taking naps, getting up late, not starting till 11. But he still said he couldn't perform because he was overprepared.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we will look back at that debate and question who in his inner circle was encouraging him to do this so early.
Daring Trump to take it.
Right. It was one of, if not, I believe, the earliest presidential debate in terms of an election year. And clearly it was a misstep for Biden because his health and his mental state was put on full display. I do, when it comes to politics, you have to keep your inner circle very tight with an announcement like this. It doesn't surprise me that people didn't know because we've been seeing leaks for weeks now. Hardly any information is being kept in. So no one could know until Biden put out the word. So that doesn't surprise me, but it also shows what the state of the Biden administration and the Biden inner circle was.
Yeah, it turned out possible VP picks. They say Pritzker, they don't have him down here, but I think Mark Kelly, Josh Shapiro, governor of Pennsylvania, the governor of Michigan, who has not endorsed Kamala yet, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Andy Beshear of Kentucky, a Democrat in a red state, Governor Gavin Newsom, not going to happen, two states, same state, and then Governor Roy Cooper. Do you have a sense of who would help the most?
Well, I think the funny thing is news moves so fast, which you know better than anyone. We should note that Kamala Harris is obviously not yet the presumptive nominee. She has taken over the Biden-Harris ticket. It's been filed. She is officially running for president. But by no means is she the presumptive nominee. The delegates that were pledged to Biden are now released. They're probably encouraged to vote for her.
About 500 have said they would go for her.
But it's not a done deal. And it's the day after this announcement.
Right.
It does look like, and I think it would be hard for anyone within the establishment to come out and say, I'm going to run against her because of the optics, particularly in that party. You wouldn't want to speak out against a standing VP and a woman of color. But by no means is she the presumptive nominee. I don't think any of those candidates that you just mentioned want to tank their career because they all have potential futures in the White House themselves. So I don't think you right. start to think about the VP until we get closer to her really shoring up those delegates.
So talk about money. A lot of billionaires are coming to Trump. Elon Musk on his side, he said, simple incentives explain everything. A complex explanation is rarely needed on why he left. David Sachs, one candidate survived assassination. The other one staged a coup. Your choice, America. Bill Ackman wrote, if Kamala Harris is not the nominee, it would be an acknowledgement that she was never qualified to be vice president. And we all kind of know that. And the money that you mentioned that Joe Biden has raised, are you 90% sure, 95% sure that Kamala can cash in on that?
Yeah. So here's I do think there will be fights in the courts, potentially in front of the FEC, because I think it's a lot of money. We're talking about, you know, 96 million cash on hand at the end of June. So the Republicans are not going to want her to get that money easily. However, from what I understand, including from conversations with Ken Gross, who's a former FEC election lawyer, because she is in the campaign committee of Biden Harris, with her name staying on that committee, she has access to those funds. So they are hers. I think it would be hard pressed to argue otherwise.
All right, Madison, we'll see you all over the channel. Madison Olworth, thanks so much. Fox Business correspondent, but you're going to see her on the road in Chicago, too. And keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show continues.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.